Welcome to Pivot Matters. I'm your host, Jeff Lynn. Thanks for tuning in today. On the show, we talk about the ever-changing landscape of healthcare payments and the impacts to healthcare payers, providers, and consumers. You can follow the conversation on Twitter at hashtag Payment Matters and follow me at Jeff B. Lynn. My guests for today's episode are Nader Sami, CEO, and Matt Litzelner, SVP of Finance of National Medical Billing Services. National Medical Billing Services provides revenue cycle outsourcing services for ambulatory surgery centers and their affiliated surgeons. Matt and Nader, really great to have you today. Just to kind of for the sake of introductions here, can each of you just do a quick background and talk about your experience?
Yeah, Jeff, thank you. We're excited to be here today. And so I'll just jump in. This is Nader Sami. And in terms of my background, I started life, actually came from a little bit different background. I started life as a corporate finance attorney, and I did that for about 3 years. And then I moved into investment banking on Wall Street and then moved to San Francisco during the dot-com days, 99-2000 timeframe of, you know, doing investment banking there as well. So a lot of mergers and acquisitions, capital raising, taking companies public, all of that entailed. And then being in the heart of San Francisco in 2000, I ended up leaving all of that to start a company with a couple other folks. And we focused on healthcare. I come from a healthcare family. My parents are physicians and had been around that. And one of the things I was doing in investment banking was covering a lot of business services and outsourcing companies. So I ended up leaving, starting a company in the revenue cycle. We built that up to about 2,500 people and sold it in my year off during that time frame. Was fortunate enough to meet Lisa Rock, who is the founder of National Medical. She's our current president today. And that was April 2010. We came together and we've been, you know, building the company. We've grown about 900% in that time frame. And so it's been a fun ride. And that's my background.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff, for having us today. My name is Matt Litzelner. I am the senior vice president of finance here at National Medical. Been here for almost 4 years. And my previous life, I have been in public accounting. I am a certified public accountant. Spent about 6 years in auditing various firms around the St. Louis area. Had a small stint at AT&T as a senior corporate internal auditor. And then also was the controller at the largest IT consulting firm here in St. Louis before coming to National Medical. So it's a pleasure to be here today.
That's great. And clearly some diverse backgrounds that both of you bring to the table here. And so maybe for our listeners here, as you talk about, I'd love to understand a little bit more about your business, National Medical Billing Services. What does a billing service do? What exactly are the services that are offered here? And how does that relationship apply to those healthcare providers? And I think in your situation, it's the ambulatory surgery centers, the ASCs, and those surgeons. Just maybe explain sort of the differences and how what billing services do.
Sure. So the way we characterize it is a really very much a financial services advisory for surgery centers and their practices, kind of the broad bucket we would put it in. And so more specifically, we take the role of negotiating the managed care contracts that those surgery centers and the surgeons have with all the insurance companies, whether it's United or Blue Cross, Aetna, et cetera. So understanding that nuance, how to negotiate the best rates, understanding what's going on in the country, the cost structure, all that sets the stage for what they will and should be paid. And it's very wide ranging in terms of what people get paid for the same procedures in healthcare. And so getting that part right is very important. And then the billing and reimbursement process is, it handles everything from taking the operative notes once a surgeon has dictated it or it's in their electronic medical records, and you code those claims out. So you code the claims, you get them in that billing system, you submit them electronically, you post payments when they come in, you flag when there's underpayments and pursue it. If there's overpayments, you refund, and then you have an entire denials management and accounts receivable management team that's focused on fighting the payers for those monies that are left on the table. And the payers are quite sophisticated and complex in their approach. And so it's very easy to leave, you know, significant dollars on the table. I think studies show the billions of dollars that are left on the table by providers every single year. And then we wrap all that in with our proprietary analytics tools so that you can see really everything happening in your center and in your practice and understand so you can make good informed business decisions on where you should be spending your time, how you should be utilizing your operating rooms, where the money is to be made, where you're leaving money on the table, et cetera. We don't obviously advise on clinical decisions, but from a business standpoint, we kind of become the business advisor for all things impacting revenue to our surgery centers.
Got it. And the question also, another open question here, which is, you know, ambulatory surgery centers, and I'm going to abbreviate those as ASCs. You know, how would you characterize that segment of the market and versus like the standard medical practice that's out there? You know, there's been a lot of, hearing a lot of noise in the industry. There's a shifting towards more usage of these ASCs more and more. And interested in your perspective here, what do ASCs do that's unique and different than sort of the standard provider practice?
Yeah. And Jeff, that's a great question. And I think a lot of people are starting to understand what it is, but many people still don't fully. And so it's a really good question. So I wouldn't distinguish it from the medical practice so much as to say the medical practice is where the surgeon, you know, goes to work as, you know, his office. So when you go see your orthopedic surgeon, for example, to go, you know, for your doctor's appointment, that's going to happen in his medical practice and that continues. What happens there is, let's say he ends up through his process and you get an MRI and the diagnosis is you tore your ACL or you need a total knee replacement. At that point, then the surgeon and the schedulers and such will say, you need surgery. Would you like to have surgery inpatient at the hospital, in a hospital outpatient department, which is still owned by the hospital and part of the hospital, or would you like to go to a surgery center? So those are really your three primary places to have surgery. And the reason why surgery centers are the fastest growing and hottest sector of the healthcare delivery market today is because in the surgery center, the main constituents, if you think about it, are the surgeons, the patients, and the insurance companies. And so from a surgeon standpoint, these surgery centers are much easier and more flexible to get to schedule. You don't have the 2-3-4 week delays to schedule your surgery that you might have in the hospital where you're competing with everyone else for that operating room time. Secondly, you're able to staff it. You know, they're smaller. There might be 3 or 4 operating rooms. So they're smaller. You can staff it with the staff you want. You can invest in the technology you want. You're not sort of dependent on the hospital to make those decisions for everybody. You're picking what you want. And then finally, typically physicians are shareholders in the surgery center, so there's financial upside for them. From a patient standpoint, it's convenient, it's flexible, it's a lot of personalized attention, and the costs are significantly lower. Your co-insurance and such will be significantly lower because, as we go to the payer bucket, it's a significantly lower charge. Payers typically pay about 50% in a surgery center what they would have paid if the same procedure was done in a hospital. So it brings the cost down for all of healthcare. Payers pay less, patients pay less. So it's one of those we talk about in the industry, it's a win-win-win for patients, providers, and the insurance companies. And it's not too often in life you get those three wins in the same place.
Got it. Yeah. And I see that win-win-win. And maybe this next question is for, you know, and Matt, and interested in your point of view, which is, you know, we're in the midst of a pandemic right now tied to COVID-19. And clearly this win-win-win is great here, but we see the hospital rooms getting filled up in certain areas of the country with those patients here. What has the COVID-19 pandemic meant to these ASCs? What have you seen, clearly on the front line, as you're looking at this from all the billing and processes that are occurring there? Interested in your perspective and what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a significant drop. You know, back in March when the government and everything shut down, it was a huge impact for all of healthcare, especially ASCs, and the volume, you know, really dropped almost 80-90% over that time in April, and we saw kind of that rebound 50% in May, kind of up back up to 75% in June, and you know, about 90% in July. So this pandemic and COVID-19, you know, it hit the surgery center market really hard and volumes decreased, you know, like I said, very significantly over that period. And you know, during that time, we encouraged a lot of our clients to get help from the government programs that were out there, you know, whether it was the PPP or, you know, healthcare and CMS advance payments to help with the shutdown and keep employees employed. As volumes were low, we felt that that was very important. And obviously the government stepped in and helped some of that as well.
And what are you seeing today as we're in the tail end of 2020? Are you seeing procedures pick up? Or clearly, it's probably hopefully not as bad as the 80-90% drop in April.
No, I mean, from our client base as a whole, I think we're, you know, about 95% of where we were pre-COVID. Hopefully, you know, by the end of the month or by the end of the year, kind of that 100% as an overall average for our client base. But hopefully, you know, we see the industry kind of that same way, as they are almost back to normal, you know, pre-COVID numbers, but probably still a little bit of a lag there. But, you know, hopefully in the recent months, we'll get back to over 100%.
Got it. And what are the things here, but interested in your point of view, clearly is, you know, sounds like these ASCs are more nimble. They don't have the overhead here that, you know, you have to have in a large hospital or health system here. And, you know, and the strong incentives from both the patient side, the payer side, and even the surgeons to operate in this environment here. The question here is like, you know, how do you approach even the patient payments that occur there? And you know, I don't know if that this is a problem that you see here as those deductibles and coinsurance numbers increased. You know, how have these ASCs been able to engage with these patients in terms of patient collections? And that's a question for both.
Okay, I can jump in and start. So it is, and of course, all the trends are that patient payments are a rapidly growing component of the income of providers today. And we actually refer to patient as a payer a lot now. So it's a big deal, where in years past, especially in the surgical environment, you didn't really care if you got paid by the patient or not. And now it really matters. So the ones who do the best job have a really good, strong front-end process of calling the patients in advance, giving them the information, giving them proper patient estimations. And that's tricky in the surgery center world a little bit, because you've got to understand how the contracts read, and the surgery may not end up being exactly what they thought it was going to be. It might be scheduled for something, and then they might do one or two more things from there. But in any event, there's some complexity to it. But those who have good, strong processes up front and have and can leverage technology in the form of patient portals, patient communication tools, and really try to create a positive patient experience are those who do the best in this arena. But once a person, they haven't paid, they come in for surgery and they walk out the door, all, you know, basically your likelihood of collecting those monies decline rapidly. And you also have higher complaint ratios from the clients who you have to follow up with later, because they've already received their healthcare, they feel good, and now they don't want to necessarily pay or be bothered to, you know, about paying. So getting all of that right on the front end and utilizing really good technology is critical.
Yeah, and let me ask just a quick follow-up question here. No, absolutely. This is a great, interesting topic here. And it sounds so simple here, which is, you know, give, you know, set expectations in terms of the payment and great patient communication / you know, offering a patient portal. Why won't most, if not all, like, it sounds so simple, right? What are the barriers you see in terms of if this is becoming a bigger problem in these ASCs? Are there barriers, limitations, technology investments, people, like where do you see the sort of the headwinds that prevent these type of solutions from being brought into the market, being brought into these ASCs?
Yeah, first and foremost, it is cultural. Surgery, like I said, surgery and surgery centers would make a lot of money from the insurance side of the payment, and they don't want to upset their patients. And so to the extent that they can, you know, be very profitable and not bother patients too much, they don't want them to cancel. They don't want them to go somewhere else. And so I think there's always that underlying fear from a surgeon's perspective that they're going to lose some folks because they're going to feel like they have to pay pay too much or pay at all when maybe they didn't care in the past. Compliance has changed a lot. Not only is the percentage of the income moved up, but also compliance has gotten much stronger in those arenas. So you have to be very careful. So I think that's first and foremost. I think the second part is, I think just like anything else in healthcare, is that it's the process by which to go about investing in technology, making the decision, getting your team to you using it, your team to use it. It all takes time. So I think it is coming, and to many people are doing a good job with it. But I think that I would say those are the cultural issue and then the speed to adopt and adapt to cutting edge technologies are probably the biggest limitations.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Payment Matters. I'm joined by Nader and Matt of National Medical Billing Services. And we're discussing the impact of COVID-19 on ambulatory surgery centers and their affiliated surgeons. So I want to take a step back here and really kind of think about this, which is, you know, clearly COVID-19 has impacted not only your clients, but I assume it's impacted also your company, National Medical Billing Services. And how have, you know, in terms of the billing and reimbursement processes that you have today, coding those claims and so on, how has that impacted your staff? And maybe a question for Matt here, like how have you been able to support them and so on in this time of change here?
Yeah, I mean, when this pandemic hit, everyone was kind of open arms and saying, you know, where do we go? What do we do? And how do we get people working from home? So we were proactive in that approach and made sure that, you know, everyone had laptops and was able to not miss a day of work at that point in time. So we were very fortunate to kind of be on the forefront of that and say, okay, let's get everyone up and running working from home. And also our company is heavy, heavy technology. So we're actually able to do our jobs from home where other companies might not be so lucky. So we actually, you know, our production has remained very high during this time and we've excelled. And one thing that we've done is, you know, we've built the company, Nader and Lisa, you know, built this company and maintained the company culture. So we've also done things where Nader and Lisa will have a town hall meeting and just say, look, this is where we're at as a company. This is where we're moving and those types of things. We have employee nominations of the week to help engage employees. So you can still see people that you used to work with and see every day, but you can actually see videos and these video nominations every day. We've done different car parades. So we feel like it's important to not lose sight of what company you've built and making sure that that culture is intact. But, you know, overall, our staff has really coped very well. We had some bumps in the roads with you know, either kids, you know, being at home from school and how does that affect your day if you're on the phone with a payer and those types of things. But we've also sent out surveys for our staff that said, you know, what are your issues? Are you having IT issues? Are you having, you know, other external issues working from home? And why are you working from home? Is it because you're, you know, it's the COVID pandemic or it's your kid needs to be home because of school? So again, we've been very open about communication and I think that's helped our staff cope when doing this. But again, we're also very fortunate when a majority of what we do is tech related and they, you know, they're working from a computer. So we've been able to really weather the storm that way from a production standpoint.
That's great news. And keeping the culture is critically important, especially this year. Matt, also interested in your perspective here as clearly the work and place environment has changed for your company. Assuming COVID goes away, we have a strong vaccine here that's able to address this. Do you think this movement toward working from home is going to change dramatically how you approach this, especially the work from home concept or kind of building culture virtually? What's your long-term view about how this could change sort of how you approach this within your own employees?
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot. And I guess the, you know, the uncertainty right now is what's the new normal, right? And where do we, how long is this going to last and where do we see it going? But I don't think it'll ever be 100%, you know, where we were pre-COVID, especially from a, you know, working from the office and working from home environment. I think it'll be a blend of that, what that looks like, you know, to be determined. But yeah, I think that this has definitely had an impact on, you know, us and the industry and really, you know, the whole world at that point of what does that look like? You know, are people going to come back to the office sooner or later? I don't think anything's going to get a little bit back to normal until probably summer of next year, But again, we'll see what happens. But yes, I think that new normal is still to be determined, but I think that there will definitely be a blend, and I'm not sure we'll ever go back to where we were pre-COVID.
Right. Yeah. This is a transformative event within, within healthcare, not only the country, but also healthcare, right? To a certain extent. Nader, I guess a question here for you, which is, what's your perspective? We've heard a lot of news articles, high unemployment rates, shifting a lot of patient populations to the government programs, especially Medicaid here. And how have you advised your ASC clients in terms of what they can expect in 2021 and beyond in light of, the post-COVID, and then I think Matt said this, the new normal here. What's your prediction for this space for ASCs?
Specifically, Jeff, are you saying specifically as it relates to that shift in insurance mix or in general?
In general.
Yeah, there's a couple of things, Jeff, that work for and against center. So, of course, you have the issue you raised. Now, unemployment is, I think, rapidly decreasing from where it was in that April, May, time frame. I think there were actually some governmental incentives that encouraged almost, layoffs and furloughs during that time frame with the pay that people were able to get by being unemployed. So it kind of worked well, for everybody to go that route. So the numbers have certainly gotten more, they're not where we want them yet, but unemployment, settling down a little bit here. So I don't know that's going to have a dramatic impact on our surgery center world a little bit. I think the flip side, the positive side, is that we've talked about that movement a little bit of surgery centers being this hot place. So what's happening over time with technology advancing and people gaining more comfort and understanding what a surgery center is, you're starting to get these big ticket items, these, orthopedics, total joint replacements, spinal fusions, ablations on the cardiology side, big ticket items that 5, 10 years ago would have never thought would be done outside, would only be done inpatient with all, and then eventually move to outpatient in a hospital and now to surgery centers. So there's a major movement and positive trend in the growth of revenue moving to surgery centers. So there's a little bit of an increase in centers. There's a little bit of an increase in procedures, but there's a big increase in revenue because the kinds of complexity of the procedures moving there. So we actually think it's an amazingly positive time to be in the surgery center market. And, even as you'll see, there's, been some big investments in this marketplace recently. So I think, whether it's private equity or otherwise, I think there's a lot of money coming in the market because they also believe in those same trends.
Having been in healthcare, and this is called really, really thinking big here, healthcare has some, it's not perfect. Clearly you see that probably from your point of view here. But what's your vision for healthcare in the next 10 years? And if you really have this magic wand for healthcare, what would that be? Like, what would you do to say, snap your fingers, something could change, really how that could really kind of streamline, simplify, really create that long-term view, like the utopic view of healthcare. What would that look like to you?
In the U.S., we provide the greatest healthcare in the world, and I don't want to lose sight of that. So there clearly are opportunities for improvement, but no one delivers a better healthcare product than we do here in the U.S. And I don't want to lose the innovation and the quality that our system has created. At the same time, healthcare costs are skyrocketing, and that's clearly not sustainable. So with kind of that goal of corralling those costs without reducing our leadership position in healthcare, I'd like to see a few things. First, I would say continued movement from the fee-for-service model, which really just drives and incentivizes increased volume and increased usage, to some of the value-based models, which have been evolving, but still slowly, but really the ones that will compensate people for achieving quality and great outcomes and disincentivizing that unnecessary healthcare usage, unnecessary surgeries, et cetera. And there are some very early-stage companies right now that are focused on outcome tracking. Because one of the challenges I think that we all have is we have, surgery. We need to go look for a surgeon. How do you find your surgeon? You ask someone, and
you know, how do you really understand? You can't go to, there's no Yelp. There's none of those really great tools that track outcome. Even if it's a Yelp, it sort of gets to their bedside manner. Did you enjoy the experience? But being able to have tools that tell us to go, when we go shopping, we actually have something that, sort of the equivalent of a Consumer Reports guideline as to who's the best total joints guy, who's going to fix my shoulder, that sort of thing. So that is really important to an important component of there. And I also think there needs to be a continued evolution toward the patient as the ultimate consumer. That will continue to drive innovation and competition and will deliver the best quality, you know, while creating a great experience for patients. And then just the final point I would make is that the healthcare environment needs to continue or really to accelerate its ability to embrace technology to automate so many of the manual and costly functions. There's artificial intelligence and machine learning tools that can help clinically to better help diagnose patients. They can help automate back-end administrative functions, reduce incorrect diagnoses, and eliminate financial waste. So in the grand scheme, those are really the main areas that I think our industry needs to continue evolving in that direction, and I think we'll be in a good place. But again, I really want to emphasize, I don't want to lose sight of the great quality of healthcare that's delivered in our country.
Yeah, that's great. And Matt and Otto, those are just kind of great kind of points of views for the long-term vision for healthcare, and 100% agree, which is we deliver great healthcare in the U.S. And for all you listeners, those are the payment matters we're tackling today. Thank you to my guests, Nader and Matt, for joining me today. And just for our listeners, where can they learn more about you and your company?
So our website is nationalascbilling.com. So that would have, you know, all the info. And if you have any questions, there's certainly information on there, and you can give us a shout.
That's great. And once again, I want to thank you guys for joining me. And thank you to all you listeners for listening in. Remember that you can listen to this episode weekdays at 4:30 a.m., 12:30 p.m., and 8:30 p.m. Eastern. You can also listen to this on Apple Podcasts and Google Play Music, or just say, Alexa, play Healthcare Now Radio. If you have a comment about the episode of the show, follow hashtag Payment Matters, or connect with me on Twitter at Jeff B. Lynn. You can learn more about my show at healthcarenowradio.com or at instamed.com. Until next time, I'm Jeff Lynn.